let the president know in no uncertain terms that we are alive, awake, and we are woke. We are not going away.
U.S. politics heating up. It's Friday, August 17th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, Cambodia fights back against allegations its recent election was rigged. Asian and Cajun cuisine meld into something altogether new. And the passing of an American queen. It's all today, ahead on VOA Asia. Cambodia's National Election Committee has declared that the ruling Cambodian People's Party won all 125 parliamentary seats in last month's election, extending Prime Minister Hun Sen's rule 5 more years. The July 29th vote took place with no significant opposition, a ballot roundly condemned as illegitimate. Wednesday, the U.S. took action to show its displeasure with the way that the ballot was conducted. Heather Nauert is a State Department spokeswoman.
We are expanding the visa restrictions initiated on December 6, 2017, on individuals involved in the undermining of democracy in Cambodia. The expanded entry restrictions may apply to individuals both within and outside the Cambodian government who are responsible for the most notable anti-democratic actions taken in the run-up to the flawed July 29th election. In certain circumstances, their immediate family members will also be subject to restrictions. We reiterate our call for the Cambodian government to take tangible actions to promote national reconciliation by allowing independent media and civil society organizations to fulfill their vital roles unhindered, and immediately release Kem Sokha and other political prisoners, and ending the ban on political opposition.
A Cambodian spokesperson said that the restrictions will not be effective. The only viable opposition party, the Kum Sokha, was jailed in September on charges of treason. David Chandler, professor emeritus at Australia's Monash University, told VOA's Victor Beatty he's not sure what effect that the U.S. action will have on Cambodian politics.
Total victory was what the Cambodian leader Hun Sen had in mind. He didn't have in mind an election that involved serious organized opposition, and there certainly wasn't any in the election.
Rights groups said the poll was neither free nor fair.
The opposition parties had been dissolved, the leaders had been put in jail or gone into voluntary exile overseas. The elections themselves were not really contested, and so in that sense you could say they weren't really real elections. The point to be made about the Cambodian elections, which were, of course, neither free nor fair, that's quite true, is that they resemble elections held in many parts of Southeast Asia that are even more severe on opposition, such as in Vietnam and in Thailand. There's no opposition allowed. It's become a sort of a habit in mainland Southeast Asia to have elections that are neither free nor fair. So I'm not saying it's correct, but it's a widespread phenomenon.
In a speech on Wednesday to thousands of garment workers, the Prime Minister said he wanted to hold a meeting with leaders of the 19 other parties that contested and was considering offering them positions as government advisors or even senior posts in various ministries.
He can say that, and because the parties that he set up for, that were set up by the government to oppose him in the election, were all fake parties. They were not sincere members of the opposition. And by saying he's going to co-opt these people, they'd already been co-opted by being selected to oppose the election, and very few people voted for them. Was made to seem to look to the, certainly his audience, that he's going to widen up his base of support. But this is just, I don't think this is true. I think he's going to continue as planned.
Well, the result of this election was quite different from the general election outcome of 2013, wasn't it?
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, in the 2013, the results were not pleasing at all to Hun Sen. He felt that there was a possibility that the results could either recur or even get worse in this year. So he felt the best way to avoid that is to not allow a vigorous and open opposition to his People's Party to operate in the election.
China's President Xi Jinping sent his congratulations to Hun Sen, saying Cambodia achieved political stability, economic growth, and remarkable success under his leadership. What does this mean for China?
I don't think it means a whole lot for China, because they've just locked themselves into a very happy patron relationship with Hun Sen and giving him billions of dollars worth of economic assistance. They're very happy with his behavior generally. They're certainly happy with an election that didn't threaten or undermine in any sense their own patronage of the country. And I think it was a very pleasing communication for Hun Sen to receive and a very easy one for the Chinese to write.
David Chandler says he's not very optimistic about the future of Cambodia's political opposition. He said while many jailed opposition members will eventually be released, many will be fearful to challenge the prime minister, who maintains tight control over all levels of power. He said that they will have no National Assembly seats to occupy and no parliamentary immunity with which to challenge the government. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Officials in Beijing and in Hong Kong have issued warnings after a journalists' association broadcast a speech by an advocate for the city's independence. Torrential monsoon rains have disrupted air and train services in the southern Indian state of Kerala. Amnesty International is demanding that Vietnam immediately and unconditionally free environmental activist Le Dinh Long. And authorities in Afghanistan confirm that 4 days of fighting with the Taliban in and around the city of Ghazni has killed 100 security personnel. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. Along the Gulf Coast of the United States, two distinct cultures have settled in the area: Vietnamese refugees and Cajuns, descended from French colonists who first lived in the eastern part of Canada hundreds of years ago and eventually resettled in Louisiana. Cajun cuisine is known for its unique blend of spices and seafood, sausage, and rice. Many of the Vietnamese who live along the Gulf Coast not only embraced Cajun food, but created something new, a fusion of two cuisines. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has details from a Vietnamese Cajun restaurant in Houston.
This is how we start to sort out the coffers.
From the preparation to how it's cooked and seasoned, there is an art to making boiled crawfish. It's perhaps the best known Cajun food. But in Truong Nguyen's kitchen, there is a twist.
We sprinkle that with the Cajun seasoning right now.
Nguyen's restaurant, Crawfish and Noodles, combines Cajun cooking with what he knows of his own Vietnamese culture.
Back in Vietnam, my grandmom, it was a very great cook. So I was have that taste many years growing up with her, so I kind of had that taste in me while I work along, help her along to prep the dish.
Nguyen arrived in the U.S. in the late 1980s as a Vietnamese refugee seeking political asylum. He studied and worked several jobs, including one in marketing in a Louisiana casino, before going into the restaurant business. He is not the only Vietnamese immigrant on the Gulf Coast who turned to the seafood industry.
The first immigrant came to the U.S. is pretty much the people who live in a shrimp boat. You know, they do a lot of shrimp and stuff.
Embracing Cajun food, prevalent along the Gulf Coast, was a natural next step.
They do a lot of crawfish. They do a lot of shrimp, a lot of catfish, alligator, you know, on the Cajun style. So from there, the Vietnamese seem to understand that culture more. So Vietnamese dive into that kind of business. My version is I use a lot of Vietnamese seasoning. Mix it in some of the Cajun part to make it, because Vietnamese like seasoning.
The French culture is something else the Cajuns and Vietnamese have in common. Vietnam was a French colony, and the Cajuns' ancestors were French colonists.
I use a lot of French ingredient on my food.
Chef Nguyen calls the flavors in his dishes Viet Cajun, and the Vietnamese as well as non-Vietnamese customers at this restaurant have developed quite a taste for this fusion of flavors.
Mike Vandenbold and his friends eat here once a week.
I was born and raised in South Louisiana, so I know Cajun crawfish. And so when we came here, the extra Viet Cajun spice is what made it for us, and we like these better than the traditional Cajun crawfish.
It's very flavorful, there's lots of seasoning on it, and the crawfish is cooked perfectly.
The main thing is good food needs to be shared.
Wen says he would like the next generation of chefs to create an even better version of Vietnamese Cajun cuisine to celebrate the blending of these two cultures. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
Happening now in Asia, Asian shares closed mostly lower in Wednesday trading, shrugging off positive tone on Wall Street. Greater China markets slid, with the Shanghai Composite following 2.06%, notching a third straight session of declines. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Thailand will ban imports of 432 types of scrap electronics within the next 6 months, an environmental ministry official said on Thursday. That makes Thailand the latest country to respond to China's crackdown on imports of high-tech trash this year. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for all new features. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. In less than 3 months, U.S. voters will cast ballots in midterm congressional elections that could alter the course of Donald Trump's presidency. Results from recent primary and special elections reveal a political landscape highlighted by energized Democrats, dedicated Trump supporters, and a sense in both parties that a polarized country is heading for a combustible showdown in November. VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone explains.
It's a brand new day.
Outside the White House, Trump opponents, including comedian Rosie O'Donnell,
let your voice be heard,
gather for an event that is both protest and performance art.
Let the president know, in no uncertain terms, that we are alive, awake, and we are woke. We are not going away.
Results from recent primaries and special elections show Democrats are mobilizing for November with a distinctly anti-Trump message. Senator Bernie Sanders.
People are standing up, they are fighting back, and they are going together to transform this country politically and economically.
President Donald Trump has launched an aggressive campaign effort on behalf of Republicans, hoping to counter predictions of a blue wave of Democratic gains.
America is respected again, and America is winning again. Because we are finally putting America first.
This message resonates with Trump's base, including Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan.
The embassy is going to Jerusalem, and the hostages have been returned from North Korea. That's what's happened under the president's leadership. Thank you very much.
But in the midterms, Trump and the Republicans face an uphill battle, says analyst John Fortier.
So I think they'll get some of their voters out, but I think it'd be hard to overcome the enthusiasm on the Democratic side. So a very good chance the Democrats will take the House of Representatives, or if not, they will gain quite a number of seats.
While Trump may help some Republicans in November, there is also the risk that he motivates Democrats, warns John Hudak.
In many races throughout the country, the president's input is likely to be more harmful than good for a Republican candidate, and the president would be best served to be wary about which districts and states he goes into.
Polls show while working-class voters largely remain with Trump,
many women and suburban voters are likely to turn away from Republicans, says analyst Michael Barone.
In the House, it's clear that a lot of, high education, upscale voters have got very strong negative feelings about Donald Trump and the Republican Party. They're eager to vote.
It's now becoming increasingly clear that activists from both parties see the midterms as a national referendum on the Trump presidency. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Singapore has been ranked as APEC's 11th most livable city, just one place behind Hong Kong. This according to the Economist Intelligence Unit's Global Livability Ranking. Singapore has now come slightly behind its regional rival Hong Kong with an overall rating difference of just 0.1%. All the stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia. Even before the Asian Games officially begin Saturday in Indonesia, athletes made news. In a preliminary women's basketball game late Wednesday, three North Koreans joined nine South Koreans to dominate Indonesia 108-40. The two Koreas will compete as combined teams in rowing, canoeing, and dragon boat racing. But China is set to dominate again, as it has since joining the quadrennial competition in India in 1982. Brian Bridges is an adjunct professor at Hong Kong's Lingnan University and an East Asia sports analyst. He told VOA's Victor Beatty, this is a significant athletic event for the Asia-Pacific region.
It's different from the Olympics in the sense that it has a much wider range of sports. Although there will be a number of sports in the Indonesian Games where they are hoping to showcase them and that perhaps it could in turn become an Olympic sport at some later stage. So it is important in that sense also.
China has dominated these games for decades. Will it do so again and by how much do you think?
Well, I think it would be a great shock if China did not come top of the medal table again, yet again, which they've done consistently since the early 1980s when they rejoined the Asian Games. And I think although they may not be sending all their top stars, they certainly are sending some very, very good and very rising stars of various sports and athletics. So I would be very surprised if any other of the Asian nations would get anywhere close to the Chinese yet again in this Asian Games.
According to one report, some three-quarters of China's competitors have never been to an Olympics or Asian Games, and they're touting not only their ability but their youth.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, there is Asian Youth Games, but those are for much younger athletes. This is a kind of stepping stone, right? For most of these athletes, if they do well in the Asian Games, then they've definitely got a chance, whether it's in the Chinese team or in other countries, of getting into Olympic events 2020 or even beyond that, 2024. So I think the athletes themselves will certainly take this very seriously, and it's quite important for them to really try hard.
One report suggests that Japan and South Korea could challenge China's supremacy, for instance, in table tennis.
Yes, there's going to be certain sports, right, where obviously Japan, South Korea, and in particular sports, maybe it's badminton and one or two others, you might find the Indonesians or the Malaysians challenging strongly, but I think in terms of overall coverage, China still is likely to have the strongest suit. Obviously, as host, Indonesia has tried to bring in some Southeast Asian sports in which Indonesia might have a comparative advantage. And I think contract bridge is featuring this time for the first time, and the Indonesians have obviously put that in because they think they have strong players, card players, let's say, in contract bridge. So there's a number of unusual sports in which Southeast Asians may challenge, but overall, probably outside of Japan and South Korea, the other states will only be able to challenge in one or two selected areas where they do have particular national strength.
India is a dominant country. It's rising country. Will it be showing well at the Games?
India is a little bit of a paradox in terms of its sporting abilities, because as you rightly say, it is a huge state in terms of population, size of economy, and definitely is one of the rising powers of the global system. And yet in sporting events, it quite often underperforms.
How will this pave the way for the 2020 Olympic Games in Tokyo?
I think it's another example of, you know, we're going through a phase now in which a succession of Olympic events are being held in East Asia. We've just had earlier this year, of course, the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang in South Korea. We have the Tokyo Olympics coming up in 2020. And of course, then 2022, Beijing itself will be hosting the Winter Olympics. So these Asian Games are quite crucial in that sense of sort of providing the momentum, particularly in terms of athletes and coaches and so on, looking forward, of course, initially to 2020. So I think there is a very strong linkage between these two. And I think, you know, you mentioned earlier the Japanese. I think Japan wants to also set a good standard this time to show that, you know, when it comes to 2020, Japan is going to be competitive.
Brian Bridges with Hong Kong's Lingnan University. Finally today, music icon Aretha Franklin, known by millions around the world as the Queen of Soul, has died at the age of 76. The American singer, who had been ill for a while, was considered one of the country's greatest musical artists. VOA's Julie Tabo has this look at the life of a unique American artist. Hey, what you want?
In 1967, Aretha Franklin's rendition of the song Respect soared to the top of the charts, earning the singer the first of her 18 Grammys, the recording industry's most prestigious award. The hit song became an anthem for women.
But everyone wants respect. Everyone needs respect, from the young to the very old, and in the middle, male, female. We all want respect, and we all want to be appreciated. So it pretty much means the same thing to me now that it did then.
Respect is exactly what the singing sensation received over a career of almost 60 years. From fellow artists, celebrities, presidents, and millions of fans around the world.
I've been so many places in my life and time.
She achieved many cultural milestones along the way. At the age of 52, Franklin was the youngest recipient of the prestigious Kennedy Center Honors and was one of 14 legendary Americans to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2005. Franklin was tireless, performing at countless venues, including President Barack Obama's 2009 inauguration. Many say she was as gracious in person as she was on stage.
Music is my thing. That's who I am. I'm in it for the long run, so I'll be around singing, "What you want, baby, I got it."
While the Queen of Soul may no longer be physically with us, her music will continue to reign for generations to come. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Looking out on the morning rain. Long may she reign. Well, that's VOA Asia for today and for this week. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Thanks so much for listening and being with us this week. We hope you have a great weekend, and we hope to see you again next week. So tired before the day I met you. Life was so unkind, and you're the key to me.